everyone. This is Julie Wake from the Arts Foundation of Cape Cod. Welcome to Season 6 of the Creative Exchange Podcast. We continue our celebration of artists, arts leaders, and the brilliant minds shaping the creative landscape. From painters to performers, writers to visionaries, we delve into the diverse world of creativity to discover what it truly means to be an artist in today's dynamic and ever-evolving landscape. I hope you'll join me on this creative journey. And if you like these conversations, leave a rating or a review. Share with a friend. Help us shine a bright light on our creative corner of the world here on Cape Cod. We'd like to thank our sponsor, William Ravis Real Estate, as the official real estate company of the Arts Foundation. We'd like to thank our sponsors, the Cape Cod Melody Tent, the Kelly Foundation, the Woods Hole Foundation, and the Cape Cod Foundation. We couldn't do it without your support. We'd like to thank Bank 5 and the Cooperative Bank of Cape Cod. Thank you for supporting the arts. Welcome to the Creative Exchange. Today, we're thrilled to have the wonderful and exceptionally talented Jonathan Hawkins of Provincetown as our guest. Jonathan's journey has seen him wearing various hats, but he and his husband have now firmly planted themselves in the vibrant community of Provincetown as the new owners of the iconic restaurant and club, The Crown and Anchor. My connection with Jonathan began during the challenging times of COVID when he sought to establish a fund here at the Arts Foundation of Cape Cod to support the drag queens of Provincetown. Over the past few years, I've had the privilege of getting to know this dynamic and exuberant go-getter. Fasten your seatbelts because this episode promises to be a wild and wonderful ride into the world of Jonathan Hawkins and his incredible journey. The first time I heard you sing was at Out on the Bay.
Yeah.
I almost died.
I don't pull it out much very often. That was obviously like my entire world for almost 12 years, 15 years. But I've since taking over The Crown and producing a lot more, I find a lot more joy in, elevating others. And, I love to sit back and watch and say, this is something that I've created. I never really wanted to be a singer. It really just happened. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is my job now. And I feel so remarkably fortunate to have had the experiences that I've had. But, when I decided to sort of move on from it, I was ready, and I still, I still get to hop in here and there. Even planned. That was just like two tequila shots.
It's really good. I was like, oh my God. So you have no training?
So I grew up with no training. So both of my parents are classical musicians. And they taught at the University of Oregon and Oregon State University. My mom is a flautist. Yeah, she has her doctorate in Native American flute. True story. And Baroque flute. No, I'm so sorry. She has her doctorate in Baroque flute, which is a one-key flute from the days of J.S. Bach. Or J.P.E. Bach. One of Bach's sons. Which is super random. And my dad is a conductor and a composer. And so growing up, I wanted absolutely nothing to do with music. I was forced to be in the band. And every year I would switch instruments because I would, become first chair. And then I was like, I'm bored. I'm playing the clarinet now. And then I would do that for a year. And then I'd be like, I'm playing the flute because I'm better than all these girls. And then I'd be like, let's try the trombone. So every year I would switch. And then my senior year of high school, and I was band president. I had won state solo ensemble competitions my whole life. And then 2 weeks into my senior year, the choir announced that they were going to France. And I was like, see ya, I'm going to France, y'all.
I'm a singer.
Yeah, and I wasn't really. And I basically just sat there and barely opened my mouth. I knew that I could hold a tune, but I wasn't quite sure how to use it, I guess.
Yeah.
You could say. And then I went to college at Indiana Wesleyan University, which is a really conservative evangelical school in the heart of Indiana. And I studied social work and Christian ministries. I wanted to I wanted to be a missionary. And then in order to meet a girl that I thought that I loved, which fast forward, who was always the lead in the musicals, I auditioned for the musical at the end of my freshman year. I got the lead. And then the music department was like, why aren't you studying music? And I was like, And they're like, well, we'll pay for you. We'll give you a full ride. And I was like, well, I still want a degree in social work. And they're like, we can do both. And then for the next year, I did both. And then I got like picked up by kind of a major Southern gospel quartet based out of Indiana and started touring with them. Ended up on the Hour of Power, which was the Crystal Cathedral. They literally have a crystal church in outside of Los Angeles, right by Disneyland. And like 200 million people watched it every Sunday. And so they flew me out there, and they're like, another Christian university in Los Angeles that a lot of the people were working there. They said, you know, what are you doing, Indiana Wesleyan? You need to get out of Indiana. Like, you could be a studio musician. You could do anything you want. But come to LA. And so I moved to LA. I went to Azusa Pacific University, which is another Christian college, a little less conservative, but like still not. And then lived in LA, and then just it literally all happened. I had never done like a professional musical, and all of a sudden I was
getting noticed.
Yeah.
Getting noticed.
And just like, my girlfriend at the time, who is still one of my best friends, she was supposed to do a show called Kismet at this regional theater in Rancho Cucamonga. And she had to pull out, and they're like, oh, well, they need another tenor. And I was like, I don't act. I don't do shows. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, well, I guess I do this now.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it all just kind of, I mean, I will say the church probably saved my life in like, you know, from my early years, both my parents were kind of not present. And so the church was really good to me and really made sure that I was taken care of and had a safe.
It's a community.
It was a community. And I think that's what I took away from it. Yeah. And whereas for me, I went straight from having a community, found a new community within the queer community.
Right.
And so it wasn't like leaving one community and then not finding another one. The minute I came out, I was embraced in a totally different and authentic and loving way where I could be myself.
Mm. So is this where the activism in you has come out?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's been really interesting in the last couple of years having friends from different parts of my life come, and my sister, who is an ordained minister within the United Methodist Church. So it's very open and affirming.
Yeah.
But friends, even last week, my two best friends from Indiana Wesleyan came and visited. And they were like, this is your church. And you are creating a sense of community for these people and giving them a place to be inspired and uplifted and filled with love.
Yeah.
And I think that is what church should be.
Yes.
And so, my singing partner, Heather, who is my ex-girlfriend in college, we toured together for many, many years. And as I was like introducing songs, she'd be like, oh, you just went all Southern gospel on them. And like, I turn on like pastor mode very quickly. And then I like turn around, I'm like, what the fuck just came out of my mouth? But it worked. But like, we were trained, it just was like so instilled in us to like,
to pull people in, right? Mm-hmm. To use that.
Yeah. To use your voice to inspire, to make them feel something.
Yeah.
How to bring out a certain emotion, how to find that within yourself so that you can share it with the audience or share it with, you know, whomever you're speaking with. That, you know, that's probably what I took away most from my upbringing in the church, but I don't regret it one bit.
No,
you know, I met my best friends who are still my best friends. Mm. You know, whenever a lot of them, you know, have either come out or have become big allies. Mm-hmm. Whenever they come to the Crown and Anchor, I call it the religious trauma discount. And I'm like, just come, stay for free. And they're like, we really can pay for this. And I was like, no, we are in the trenches together. We made it out.
Yeah. Wow.
But I wouldn't change those 4 years for anything.
Right. Because it's really informed some of the work you're doing. What Absolutely. About, before we move forward from this, what about the social work degree?
Yeah. So I was always a very empathic child.
Yeah.
And really cared. I love taking care of people.
Yeah.
I have a huge heart. I have, that's something that was always really, really important to me. And as non-existent and not good parents I had, they always taught me to give others before myself. Mm. We were very, very poor growing up, but we always would serve at homeless shelters for Christmas. Christmas was never about gifts, probably because we couldn't afford them, but they made it something different for us and really instilled this attitude of giving and giving back to those less fortunate.
Yeah.
And, I would always bring extra money that I would find in my mom's purse for the kids who couldn't afford school lunch. Like, I was that kid. And I was very empathic. I had to go to counseling at a very young age because I would just feel so much.
Yes.
And I would cry because I would feel so bad
for,
and meanwhile, I'm living in a house without electricity. So, I think social work was sort of, it just made the most sense. It was what I knew, what I loved to do was just, serve others.
Yeah.
And it was really, really hard for me, that transition from focusing fully on social work to music.
Music, yeah.
Because when I was doing my social work degree, my practicum was 40 hours a week working in a school as a school social worker.
Oh, wow.
So I did that my second year of college. My third year of college, when I was studying voice, I had to spend 40 hours in a practice room all about just focusing on me.
Yeah.
And it was everything from head to toe. They're like, you need to lose 60 pounds. You need to look like this. You need to sound like this. You need to, and it was such a hard shift for me to focus on myself.
Yeah.
But I also think that is some of the damage that the church does as well. Because everything is for the glory of God and by the grace of God. So nothing was because I worked hard. Nothing was because I had talent or, I worked hard to perfect my craft. No, it was always just a gift from God.
A gift from God.
And it always was for God. And it took me a long time to figure out how I would combine the two. I obviously loved performing and love performing, but I also still love to serve and give back. And there were a few years there where I was like, what am I doing? And I felt like such a fraud, and I'd be on stage and I'd be doing altar calls and bringing people to the Lord. And And they knew I was gay the last year. And they essentially said, listen, you're under contract. We'll either sue you or, you just accept that God can still work through you. And I accepted that for a while until I was like, no, I can't keep doing this.
No.
Yeah. And so then it really kind of messed with me because I was like, because at least that was—
That's all you knew.
Yeah. And that was at least, again, kind of service. That was me using my talent to make people feel something.
Right.
And so that felt a little bit like social work. And then I was like, okay, well now what do I do?
Right.
And so it's taken me a long time to figure out how to combine the two. And I think
think you've done it.
Yeah, it's been really crazy to watch just my entire history kind of come together and be like, oh,
right.
This is what I was meant to do.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about where you are today, because it's pretty impressive. I want to hear how you got to Cape Cod.
Yeah.
And then I want to talk about what you're doing now for artists,
sure.
which is really
sure. The first time I came to Cape Cod was with my best friend, Colleen Ballinger, who plays, who's a YouTuber named Miranda Sings. This was like very, very early on in her career, in 2012. And Mark Cortali, who runs the Art House, he was her first manager. So she was coming to Provincetown. She's like, everyone thinks I'm a drag queen. Like, put on a Speedo and help me bark for my show. And I was like, that is what I do best. And there's a picture. It was 12 years ago today, like 2 weeks ago. And I, at that point, had started a bit where I would, I was doing solo shows on like RSVP cruises, where I would start the show in my underwear. And I would get dressed into a full tuxedo while singing Maybe This Time from Cabaret. Oh. That sounds so nice. And then at the very end, I would strip during Ness and Dorma.
Oh my gosh.
Back down to my underwear. So I did this in P-Town. And
it was a hit.
Well, it got me back.
Yeah. Got you some work.
Yeah, it got me some work. And so then the next year they brought me back to do a show called Showgirls. Not Showgirls. Oh my God, I'm gonna be murdered. No, it was Audition, which was basically a ripoff of Showgirls.
Okay.
When the Ryan Landry, Rick Murray split happened.
Oh,
I had no idea what I was walking into. I had not heard of Showgirls. I had not heard of Rick Murray. I had not heard of Ryan Landry. I was flown in to be a guest artist and to be a guest judge and perform. And at that point, I was touring around. It was when Eurovision Conchita Wurst won, the drag queen, Rise Like a Phoenix.
Yeah.
And I was doing work with them. And so they asked me to come and sing Rise Like a Phoenix, but they're like, but can you do it in your underwear? And I was like, if I had a dollar. So I did that performance, and then Rick Murray, the previous owner of the Crown and Anchor, was like, hey, do you want to do a show here? And I was like, oh, well, I'm currently doing a show in New York. He's like, well, I'll fly you up each week, or I'll give you travel each week and give you a place to stay, but you also have to direct and like manage this show called Audition. And the whole concept of Audition, very similar to Showgirls. However, they brought talent in and housed them in this house that we called the drag dorm. Oh. And it was like the size of this room. And there were four drag queens, bunk beds, one bathroom. And then there were like multiple little studio spaces. It was...
We're in a very small room.
Yes. Picture this. Yeah. It was crazy. And at the end of the summer, so the whole summer they were announcing that there's a $5,000 grand prize because they had to outdo Showgirls.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I get caught up in the middle of the Ryan Landry, Rick Murray scandal.
Not a good place to be.
Not a good place to be. I literally at one point got called Rick Murray's henchman as I like was walking down the street and I was like, what have I done? And one time I went to Showgirls and I literally was kicked out. They said, we heard Rick Murray's, you know, little bitch is here. Where is he? And they put the spotlight on me and they kicked me out. I was like, what the hell have I done? So I did the full summer. The whole summer they were announcing a $5,000 grand prize.
This sounds like a movie.
At the end of the summer, there was no $5,000. And so the owner, Rick, was like, well, we've got to come up with something. And I was like, all right, well, what if we give them, you know, a week-long run of shows, whoever wins this, a week-long run of their own solo show and housing and, you know, whatever cash we can scrounge up.
Yeah.
And that sort of started me producing in town because he was like, fine, just do it. And then Jackie Cox, actually, from RuPaul's Drag Race, before she was on RuPaul's Drag Race, was the winner of that. So many of us from that summer, Mackenzie, LMNOP, there are so many of us like that have either stayed or have like, you know, gradually found our way back here and we're all family. Aww. And we all are like, woof, we went through Audition together. It was terrifying.
That is terrifying.
Yeah. One time there, one of the artists who's remarkably talented found out that there was, and I was sharing a room with them, and she found out that there was not a $5,000 grand prize. And she was like, but I just bought new titties. And I was like, how is this my fault? And she's like, how am I going to pay for these? And I was like, I don't know what to tell you. Why did you buy new titties before you won? She's like, because that's how I win. And I was like, what is my life?
Oh my God.
It totally changed my life.
Yes.
And it totally taught me how to work in this environment.
Yeah.
It taught me how to be my own queer self.
Yeah.
Working with so many different artists who identify in so many different ways with so many different talents.
Yeah.
And navigating through that week to week, there'd be like up to 20 to 25 contestants.
Wow.
And I was in charge of like, I was herding feral cats is basically my job.
And this is where your social work
sure.
came in.
Sure. Well, I wouldn't call it that, but yes, but it's truly kind of where I like learned
how to
I basically
manage.
Just faked it until I made it and was like, oh, I produce now. And then I started, I was still touring at the time, so I would take the summers off from touring.
Yeah.
And then I started, building shows that would go to large performing arts centers. And then every summer I'd come back. I would do a show or create a show for the Crown and Anchor. And then I started running events for the Provincetown Business Guild. And then at the very beginning of the pandemic, my friend John Richardson went live on Facebook like day one. And he was like stoned out of his mind. And just brilliant. And there were like 50 people watching. And I was like, oh, this is cute.
Yeah.
And then I was like, we can do this better.
Yeah.
And I called him. And I was like, what are you using for this? And that was the creation.
Wake Up P-Town?
Well, that came out of that. So that was the creation of Virtual Piano Bar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which we started like literally week one of the pandemic. And by sort of middle of summer, we had 12 different artists who did weekly or bi-weekly shows, and we have like over 2 million views, and it was just people tuning in and watching their favorite artists. And so then that kind of morphed into Live from Provincetown, whereas essentially it was a virtual platform that allowed those who are unable to come to Provincetown because of the pandemic and the artists who, work and, survive off of performing, a way for them to connect with their with their fan base. And it started something really crazy.
Yes.
And there's still several artists who do shows every week on Virtual Piano Bar, which is mind-blowing to me.
That's but so good.
It created a community of people.
Yes.
And very early on, I recognized, like, this isn't going to go away. The way that people, communicate with each other, the way that people bond friendships and relationships with each other. Like, they would start their own little watch groups. There was merchandise. Like, I saw someone walking down the street with a Virtual Piano Bar hat the other day, and I was like, what the fuck?
Love that.
Yeah, it was insane. It was insane. And it took off way faster than we thought. And I was sort of at the forefront of doing the virtual programming. So then that turned into me doing like live in-home shows with Mandy Gonzalez, who was a Tony Award nominee, and like several other Broadway artists who were like, hey, we see that you do this. We're making any money. And so I essentially developed a program so that I could run sound for them virtually. I would send them a package of like, here's all you need. Here's how you set it up. I would walk through it with them. And then we would go live and they would be able to, earn income. But it was like I was literally running until I brought on a couple other individuals to run shows. I mean, we had like 45 hours of programming.
Wow.
It was crazy.
That's the power, right?
Yeah.
The power of that connection for the artist, the power for the audience.
And so many of the artists, too, obviously were Provincetown-based. And watching them grow during that year and figuring out how to connect with an audience that isn't in front of them was really fascinating. So Todd Alsop is a great example of that. He's a Provincetown-based artist. He's doing a show here in town, a George Michael tribute show and an Elton John tribute show. And
I love George Michael.
I mean, who doesn't?
And he was so talented and so ready for big, big stuff.
Yeah, but that's, his queer identity held him back. Not necessarily the system, even though there's no way that
and
they
mental
would
have health, too.
100%.
Yeah.
And that just shows how important it is for people to be their authentic selves and to find a place where they can be their authentic selves.
Yeah.
And that's why I think Provincetown is so important.
It is.
So like week three into the pandemic, We had just started Virtual Piano Bar. My touring life had stopped. I had not been still for like more than 6 weeks in like 8 years.
And is that when I met you?
Yeah. Well, like probably around, like, about 2 months later.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I was in a terrible relationship. Hope you're listening. I was in a terrible, terribly abusive relationship that was ongoing because I was on the road. And so I thrive in long distance relationships, especially when they're abusive. And so I was home with him for 3 weeks and I was like, oh, I gotta go.
Yeah.
And I had nothing. I had no prospects. I had started this virtual programming that I was like, welp. And I moved to Provincetown. And I had literally no idea what I was going to do except run these virtual shows. And then that turned into so much more.
It really did.
It really did. So and that's I met when
you,
we met.
Yeah. That I met you once you were here.
Yeah, so,
Established because
kind
you,
of. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that I gave you that impression.
Well, I was kind of like, what is going on? But I want to be part of this.
Yeah. So Rick had, you know, we have that back pool area and the previous owner of the Crown. I was like, you really need to build an outdoor stage. We can't do shows inside. Let's build an outdoor theater. And he did. And I convinced him essentially to allow me to program several nights. Because, you know, on any given night, there are up to like 35 different shows in town.
It's incredible.
It's incredible. And all of those people,
100%,
all those people, not just the artists, but the sound engineers, the lighting designers, the ushers, they were all out.
The bartenders, everyone was out of work
in a community that relies on tourism and especially entertainment.
Yeah.
And the entertainers are truly the fabric of this community.
Really, they are.
And so I was like, we have to do something. And so we created Broadway on the Beach, which obviously was a Broadway review, but John Richardson and I did that and then circled talent through from each and every venue. And back then, like if you worked at one venue, you weren't allowed to work at the other venue. And I was like, enough is enough.
Right.
This is the pandemic. Like, stop.
That's right.
Yeah. And
no one's going to survive this
way. Unless we all get together and we all help each other and we all promote each other.
Yep.
And the few of us who are fortunate enough to get a space to perform, we have to share that.
That's right.
And so that's where the Provincetown Performing Arts Fund came in.
It was amazing.
And we met.
And we met.
Yeah.
Yeah. Through some mutual friends or colleagues, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you reached out to the Arts Foundation because we were the only ones that could actually give direct to artists.
I had never.
Which was really great.
Built anything like that before. And
yeah.
I was like, here's what I think we need to do as a community.
Yep.
How do I do this?
And you raised over $80,000.
Yeah.
Or more than that.
Yeah. It was, and I think our goal initially was $10,000.
Yeah.
And then it moved to $20,000. And like money still keeps coming.
I know.
And you're like, who are these people? And I was like, I don't know. And it's how I met my husband.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's true.
And it's been such a great partnership. And you've.
It's been, I truly say that like giving back.
Yes.
Brought us together because he has such a big heart. I mean,
he does.
He has like, he is the kindest. And I was very adamant about not dating for a while after leaving my ex.
Yeah.
And he came along and I was like refusing. I was like, oh, we're just hanging out.
He was special.
He was very special. And his kindness and his generosity and his like calming spirit was like everything I needed and didn't realize. And we really connected, I think, over that.
Yeah.
And really bonded over, you know, our love for giving back to the community. And, you know, even though we were both, you know, like I had no idea what I was doing with my life. You know, I could have easily done shows myself and could have used that money.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, I have to trust that. Yep. Supporting this community in a way that I know it needs to be supported now will pay me back tenfold.
And
he's the same way.
Yeah.
And we immediately sort of connected over, you know, our hearts for others.
Yes.
And here we are.
It's incredible what you've done. So now you are owners of the Crown.
Mm-hmm.
and which is this lively campus type.
It's crazy.
Atmosphere, yeah, right on Commercial Street in Provincetown. And there's so many stages. Like, you took me on a tour.
Everyone gets overwhelmed when I take them on tours. And I was like, you have no idea. No, so it's an 18-room hotel, an art gallery, a restaurant, a, like, cabaret supper club, a, like, 220-seat theater that turns into, like, a mega dance club, another bar called the Wave Bar, which is also a performance space that I turned into a performance space and sort of a black box area that people could kind of...
Yeah.
I always said, listen, fuck shit up. I'm tired of the way that...
Yeah.
It's the same 45-minute pattern shows in town.
Yeah.
I wanted to give an opportunity to new local artists who, you know, myself, when I first came to town... I was given like a 6 p.m. show in the Paramount and sold like 40 tickets. And it was like the most devastating thing because I walked around all fucking week in a Speedo.
Yeah.
Like selling my soul.
Right.
And 40 people would show up. And it was, you know, a combination of, you know.
40 seems like a lot though.
That's very kind of you. But it wasn't. It was a 220 seat theater. At 6 p.m. Like no, who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So I said, you know, we need to create another space where we can start building up a new audiences and build new talent and give an opportunity to the local talent, which is incredible.
So good.
But don't have the opportunity to necessarily perform or produce or create because just to live here, they have to work 17 jobs.
That's
I mean? And then they're like, oh, well, I perform at Showgirls. And you're like, what in the world? This is incredible.
Right.
And so my first summer was all about cultivating local talent and bringing in those artists who I had known for years and some that I had just met that I really believed in. And it's turned into something really, really beautiful.
It has. It has. And so the work that that we've done together with the Provincetown Performing Arts Fund is, and I just loved your generosity with this, you and Terrence Mack, and then the whole committee came together, and the Arts Foundation was your fiscal sponsor. So that means the money, you guys raised the money, came in, and then we took the applications and held the funds and then released the funds to individual performers here in Provincetown. And so you were so generous with these artists.
I mean, they're family. And I truly believe that they're, you know, again, they are the heartbeat of this community.
And it was one of the most fun projects that I've worked on, and it's just grown.
Yeah.
And I feel like you guys at the time needed us to do it, but then like what you have brought to the Arts Foundation has been really special too. Like we're so grateful to have met like your network, your friends, your family. And it's just, I just like love working with you.
It's a really special place.
Yes.
You know, this is a place where, you know, it really is, they really are family.
Yes.
You know, and it's a network of like, the greatest minds and the greatest art. Like, I love going to dinners in Provincetown because you're like, oh, you are a Nobel Peace Prize winner. You are a J1 who rides a pedicab.
Yeah.
Oh, you have an Emmy and you may or may not be homeless. Oh, turns out you're like a world-class painter.
Right.
And you're all sitting around this dinner table and it's like nothing.
Totally.
It's just this incredible community made up of, you know, brilliant minds, incredible artists, and those
like like-minded.
And those who just want to escape and have like an incredible summer in one of the most geographically beautiful places in the world,
right? And to be free,
and that's the most important thing, and to finally be their like authentic selves,
yes,
and just like seeing, you know, that was something that during the pandemic. We sort of saw go away.
Yes.
Bob Sanborn, the previous director of the Provincetown Business Guild, and I came up with the term re-queerification. And we're like, we need to take P-Town back. Because during the pandemic, so many of like the normal gays weren't coming here because they're like, I can't go to tea dance. Why would I go? So it was a lot of day trippers coming in, you know, and the lack of color we would see on the street. You know what I mean? Like normally when people are walking down to tea,
yeah,
it's this like parade of
totally
fabulosity. And
is it
queerness.
Like 4 p.m.?
Yeah, 4 yeah, to 7.
4 to 7.
And it's just like, if you're not a total fry, it's what you do. No, it's
even I've gone.
Yeah.
Sven.
Why have we not been to tea together? Oh, we would get in big trouble.
We'd be in big trouble.
Yeah. Oh, we'd have so much fun.
Okay,
yeah,
let's do
we'll
it.
Go.
Okay, we'll go.
But there would just be this like this like parade of people in caftans and dresses and
yes.
like, you know, men in business suits and high heels. And it was just one of the most beautiful things to watch. And yeah. I think this is the flagship of what a community can be, as far as, you know, in terms of you know, being open and free and affirming and caring and accepting people exactly the way they are. Mm-hmm. And that has been our entire mission, you know, at The Crown for the last, this is the end of my second season. But it's been to honor the tradition of that space and of this community, to support our community, to celebrate queer arts and to elevate the LGBTQ plus experience. Mm. And everything I do, I try to make sure aligns with all four of those things. Mm-hmm. And if I think there's a huge responsibility in what we have, and the Crown & Anchor is the largest venue in town.
Mm-hmm.
And that means I have to use it in a way that is, you
for
know,
good.
Truly,
yeah.
If, you know, and it's been really cool to watch sort of the changes that we've made thus far. And you know, my friends who started a CrossFit business are using the Paramount, which is the big dance club and
love
the beach
it.
Club, and they do CrossFit classes every morning because they were looking for a venue. And I was like, you guys,
yeah, you have all the space.
I have all the space. Please use it.
And you're right on the beach.
My friends last winter taught dance classes. One of our resident DJs, Andrew, taught a DJ course over the winter. And now like 5 or 6 like actively working DJs came out of that.
Oh, I
which is really, really
love
cool.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the other day I texted one of them. I was like, hey, can you do this pool party? He's like, sorry, I'm booked. And I was like, no, they're
I
wonderful.
Knew you went.
Yeah. Yeah, they're wonderful. And so again, it's this responsibility. Of that space.
Yes.
And something that I don't think was really a focus of what that space used to be.
Yeah.
And a lot of people didn't feel welcomed there. And a lot of people, there was not a whole lot of diversity on site. And there was not a whole lot of inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people, besides like the physical changes that we made, I always say that the rebrand has to come from within. It has to come from, you know.
The culture.
The culture of that space. Yeah. And that's the most important thing to me.
I love that. I've noticed the changes when I'm in there too. It's like, it's so vibrant.
Yeah, people are happy.
Fun. And people are happy.
People are happy. It's you know, I want every single person, you know, we always say, oh, we want everyone to feel welcome. Mm-mm. I want everyone to feel celebrated. I want every single person to feel celebrated for them being themselves. Welcome is one thing, sure. I feel welcome, you know, lots of places.
Yeah.
But I don't feel celebrated many places.
Right.
And I think it's so important to make sure that each and every person feels celebrated. And I think having representation is a huge part of that.
Absolutely.
We have that series by Zach Oren, the Ides of Gender series. And so our entire lobby area, not lobby area, the entire hotel, the public area, is filled with faces of beautiful and devastating and moving stories and beautiful photographs of trans individuals. So he traveled to all 50 states and territories and interviewed and photographed over 500 individuals. You know, finding a space where you can show 52 pieces is kind of difficult. And Paolo and I really fell in love with the project.
Yeah.
And as we were redoing the hotel, and there was one piece of like TJ Maxx art on this like crazy shining wall.
Yeah.
Like it was terrifying. You look down the hallway and you're like, this is not cute.
No.
And there was literally one piece of like TJ Maxx, like canvas art. I was like, we have the space.
Yeah.
We can
do
this.
It's a gallery.
And to have it filled with these incredible faces and these incredible stories is remarkably important.
Yeah. You it's know, very moving.
We could have filled, you know, the halls with sailboats and lighthouses, which is cute and very P-Town. But you know what else is P-Town? the trans community.
That's right.
And the amount of...
And celebrating that.
Yeah, and the amount of people who have said, you know, I've never stayed in a hotel where I felt seen. Aww. You know, it's really special.
Okay, so speaking of being seen and like you don't have enough going on... out on the bay.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like you,
yeah. So
like you took on another whole, like,
yeah, there's a lot more coming. So the winter,
good.
It never really made. So the Crown very, traditionally closed right after Holly Folly.
Okay. Yeah.
Would kind of stay open, would open for New Year's and then would be shut for 4 months.
Okay.
Like literally boarded up. And that never made sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, as I got to know a lot more full-time residents, people are like, oh, the winters are so sad here. You can go days without seeing each other. And
yeah.
I was like, well, then let's do something.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, well, it's not worth it financially. And I was like, we can figure out a way.
Yeah.
Like, there are people here. We need to give them something to do. And so my whole concept this last winter was to always keep one light on. So at any given night, there'd always be at least one venue open where people could find something or someone else to talk to.
Because
it does get lonely and mental health out here is very real.
Yeah.
And so is, you know, drug and alcohol abuse and and just having a space that you know you can go and was really game changing for the community. But it also was hard because I would watch these artists who work so hard all summer, then all of a sudden have nothing to do.
Right.
And my, you know, I love running the Crown. I, you know, I don't really care what ketchup we use in the restaurant or like, you know, what awning distributor we use. Like my heart is in producing and creating. And so all last winter, I sort of took Provincetown on the road. And so we took live from Provincetown where, you know, we essentially took Provincetown based artists and said, we went to these other queer communities or queer venues. And Provincetown and the Crown and Anchor have such a, you know, a kind of a reputation.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for entertainment. And so we went to like six different cities and produced shows. And then in a lot of those cities were artists that would like be performing in Provincetown. So like in Miami, I would pick up this artist, but Kaya and John Richardson and Yoli were always with me.
Yeah.
And then in New York, we did, a, you know, we
I
just-
I love Kaya.
Isn't she just incredible?
Amazing. Yeah.
And so we, you know, live from Provincetown is essentially like you get to experience Provincetown in your hometown.
Yeah.
And that kind of took off and we've started partnering and working with other venues, Puerto Vallarta, Palm Springs, Miami, Key West, Fort Lauderdale, New York, and just said, listen, it's our off season. It makes no sense for us to just sit around and do nothing.
That's right.
Let me build something.
Yeah.
And so Brian Barbieri, who is, I believe, the PR director or manager for EOS Hospitality, which Wequosset is under. So they have like 36, like, beautiful properties.
It's
I've never even heard
there.
Of Wequosset. I went there and I was like, whoa.
I know, right?
I was
it's
like,
beautiful.
No, this is where the rich people are.
Yeah.
It was stunning. Yeah. And they had never done a Pride event, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, listen, we want to kind of take the branding that you've built for entertainment and bring it to Wequosset. And we're now doing that this winter at one of their properties in Key West. And
That's
the, the plan is to kind of just keep going to all their properties and building, you know, these queer events in these spaces that, I mean, Wequosset is certainly not a gay venue. But
they
was
like it today.
Yes, and it was really special watching the staff and even like the management like respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were doing our first walkthrough, the event was supposed to be outside on like the Great Lawn.
Oh, right. It was raining that day. Right.
And they mentioned to me several times, like, well, we do have families here. And I was like, okay. You know, and she was like, I just want you to remember there will be, and I was like, okay. And I totally get that. You know, you never know what you're going to get, especially from me. and so I essentially proposed like a family friendly, like country fair, but just with a queer take on it.
Yeah.
And
celebrating that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't, you know, we don't have to be an assless chaps to like be queer.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think that's important, especially now, for us to be our authentic selves, but be our authentic selves in spaces that aren't used to us being there.
That's right. And that is a that's tricky, mm-hmm. right? You and I just experienced that with our gala.
It was cool to, you know, obviously you guys celebrated Mark Adams, who is like a quintessential queer icon, you know, on the Cape.
Yeah.
And has done
one of the best humans I know.
And he was so happy. He texted me when he found out I was going, and he texted me a picture of his jacket, which had all those like little rhinestones on it. And he's like, "Is this too much?" And I was like, "Girl, never."
Never
and
too
I was
much.
Like, "Don't worry. I'll go there too."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was such a great night.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we represent ourselves in these authentic ways.
Absolutely.
And again, that does not mean, you know, showing our butts. That means showing up.
That's right.
And supporting others and showing others love and the same respect that we're asking for. And, you know, I think so much of this country and so much of this world just hasn't been exposed to the beauty of us.
Right. Yeah. Like the talent.
Yeah.
The like elevating, like I thought Kaya Crystal, who is a drag queen, mm-hmm. Is so incredibly talented with or without, you know, being dressed up.
Yep.
But there was just this special vibe that they brought. A total star. And I felt at the Arts Foundation for the gala that they just elevated everything, and the timing was perfect to really embrace. And like you said, like I'm gonna describe it also as celebrating everybody, mm-hmm. Because I feel like Kaya does that, right?
She really does, and she makes sure that everyone feels. That's been a big kind of a push that I've, you know, audiences in Provincetown, from the bachelorette parties to like the tweaked out circuit boys to like the bears who just want to go eat. You know, Provincetown is just one small part of Cape Cod.
Right.
And your mission is so much greater than just Provincetown. Although it includes Provincetown in such a major, major way.
Yeah.
And so I think I wasn't obviously involved, you know, until a couple years ago, but watching just the representation over the last 2 years, has been pretty special. Mm. Then there was like three tables this year. You know, solidly, you know, members of the LGBTQ plus community. And I thought that was, you know, obviously celebrating Mark was a big part of that.
Absolutely.
But I also just think that the Arts Foundation of Cape Cod is diversifying in a really, really special way. And I think the Provincetown Performing Arts Fund had a lot to do with that because Provincetown, and forgive my ignorance, but I wasn't aware of the Arts Foundation of Cape Cod until I was introduced to you.
Right.
And there are so many of our artists who could really benefit from the work that you do.
Thank you.
And
yes.
So I think it's really important that this relationship continues and that this, you know, our missions are so similar.
Definitely.
That, you know, and that's very much what the Crown stands for.
And Jonathan. Stands for.
Yeah.
Well, this has been such a great conversation.
It's so nice to chat with you. We could chat all day.
We literally could chat all day. We'll have to do Thanksgiving together.
Yes. Yes. You're invited.
And tea.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Do you don't want to give us a little like,
I mean, that was pretty good. No, it is Carnival Week. It is the end of Carnival Week.
Oh, right. You're a little raspy.
Oh, I am like, I am dead inside and out, but like in the best way.
Good. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for all that you do for our artists, especially down in Provincetown, and for this community. We just love you and Paulo and all the things that you're doing and can't wait to see what the future brings.
Thank you. Me either. I'm excited. We'll do it together.
Hosted by Arts Foundation's Executive Director, Julie Wake, the series is an ode to the artistic process and its unique manifestation on Cape Cod and beyond. Thanks for listening.